Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Gnostic Media's Unspun, episode number 83. I'm your host, Jan Ervin. We've had a great week this week. We had Steve Outram on Saturday, doing a great conclusion to our nearly year and a half long presentation on the shadow, or the secret history of burners, the shadow history of burners. I always mix up the title, geez. And anyway, thanks to everyone who sent donations this week to support the show and the work and the research. Today we've got Hans Utterback, the infamous Dr. Hans Utter, who's been on, like, how many times, Hans? Somewhere probably between 20 and 30 or some number like that. I think you're probably the most popular guest ever. So welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Jan. It's good to be back, man.
Good to have you back. Always more research on the horizon. We've been making new discoveries. You have. Everybody's got more research to discuss and promote. And Hans has a brand new painting behind him he wants to advertise to the public there. He just did that. And he says he's going to shamelessly try to sell it. So I just gave him a little...
Wait. Thanks, Jan. I mean, that was a great entree. It's my first realistic work of art. It's called Two Apples. And, you know, it is for sale. It's actually a really good painting. Man, see, well,
so is there some occult meaning to Two Apples that we should be aware of?
Yes.
Yes.
I got two apples. Okay, no, I'm just joking. I got two apples and a paintbrush. There we go. That's the occult.
You had two apples on a table and a paintbrush.
So you can devise that triad as you want to. Yeah, no, seriously, anyone wants to buy that painting for sale, just shoot me an email. You know, very flexible. Thanks, Jan, for the shameless self-promotion. I did. Jan was...
I was trying to help take some of the pressure off you there, so it didn't look quite so shameless for you.
Well, no, I was trying to hang it on the wall, and then the tack didn't work right before we went live, and then I hung it on the closet, and I thought, well... It's a metaphor for the closed door. So it's serving a metaphoric philosophical purpose, perhaps, you know. But
to eat the apple to open the door, is that the metaphor, or which metaphor are you talking?
You know, it's like there's a door, but yet you can't pass the door because there's a work of art in front of you. And you have to buy that work of art, maybe, I don't know.
Or deconstruct the work of art and push it out of the way so you can get to the contents behind it, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, all right. So, well, you know, you wanted to call this episode Temporal Imbalance, Memory, and Music. So what do you have in store for us tonight on this ongoing subject? You know, and recently we did shows with Mark Devlin and Lennon Honor going into hip hop and deconstructing these scenes. And I also went on Mark Devlin's show with Steve Outram going further into it. And of course, your work that we did, how long has that been now? It's already been like 2 years ago we did the music Mind Control and Psychobiology series, because then we did the FM radio series after that and the Grateful Dead series after that. So it's been a while. You know, how long has that been anyway? Wow. So you have more to add.
Well, you know, when I talk to you, I've been actually quite busy, you know, doing my various things that I do, you know, lots of different concerts. I did a lot of writing, professional writing stuff. I just finished that up. So, and when you mentioned you're working on chronology, I've been thinking a lot about time, you know, using music as an entry point, so to speak, but primarily looking at the, you know, philosophical aspects, but also the whole cultural aspect, because it's something that I've noticed subjectively, phenomenologically, you could say, just how this onrushing of time, right? This time just keeps passing so quickly. And, you know, oh, you're getting old, that's the common response to that. But just started to catch stuff I've mentioned before, you know, I've talked about this, you know, not necessarily length, but I've referenced it, you know, like the use of music and things like that in these popular music songs that form tropes and they show up, you know, here and there. And, you know, and I, at a certain point, I started logging it at different locations. I go into different locations and see what kind of what they were playing. And then I found out the Muzak Corporation uses a technology called quantum modulation. Quantum modulation to change the stuff. But I would notice that, you know, based on events or different things, I would start to hear certain songs pop up again. And, you know, the rare occasion I watch a Hollywood movie, most of the time there's no original soundtrack, the same pop tunes being blasted right at you. But what really impelled me or sort of compelled me to kind of start looking at this deeper was when I was in Asia in March, April, and May of this year, 2017, the year of the eclipse, right? I hope you all saw the eclipse, hanging out with the burners in Oregon. You know, anyways, you know, the eclipse phenomenon is another example, though. I mean, these are important things, but they're disembedded, they're disembodied. They become these media events. We no longer have our own natural congruency, right, with our environments and what we're doing. But anyways, I went to India. And the first thing about India is that, you know, I've been there many, many, many times. I mean, I exact amount at least 20 times, whatever, maybe more. And this time I went, I noticed, number one, India was the place people went to escape to, right? You could go away, you could escape, you could survive, you know, you could basically go underground, whatever. And then there was still, you know, beyond all the other issues, there was still, you know, a way you could connect, so to speak, with a kind of a more organic life and go there. So that's why so many people, you know, dropped out, went there. And I've noticed changes here and there, but this time I went, it was like, welcome to the global fascist police state. You have Modi's elimination of the most commonly used cash denominations. You have the fact that I'm only allowed to change 5,000 rupees in a week, and which is equivalent to about $40 or $50, and the prices in India are now through the roof, whatever. And lots of weird, you know, kind of police state stuff going on, all this other stuff. But the weird thing that I noticed, and this is what kind of got me into the zone, was I went to some of these very nice, you know, old restaurants, you know, built during the time of the Raj or, you know, Mughal era, Bombay, Delhi, right? And in India, they have a very strong musical culture. But I went to these restaurants and they're playing for the first time in, I was there last year in India, right? They're playing classic rock songs. And there's a very limited audience for classic rock in India. I mean, it's not that popular. It's kind of limited, but I started noticing it that, you know, there's a huge array. Again, you know, they tend, you know, in India, they tend, you know, they have their own music. They love their own music. And you're going to go to any restaurant, they're going to play their own music, whether it's a, you know, cheesed out version of it or whatever. But I started noticing in these kind of hi-fi, which again, Indian term, hi-fi restaurants, they're playing this classic rock. And you go into a clothes store and they're playing classic rock in the clothes store. And it's 99% of people, you know, yes, some people like it, you know, people going to engineering school, whatever, but it's not culturally appropriate, but it's just weird that the same type of program music I was hearing in America has now come to India randomly, not randomly, at the same time Modi is putting in this biometric ID grid system. And it's not only culturally incongruous, I started to think, why in this restaurant with, you know, silk tablecloths and very delicate artwork, they're playing the same thing I'd hear at Walmart or I'd hear at, you know, the coffee shop. Okay, then I was in Thailand, and Thailand has now gone from being one of the best places to kind of, you know, retire, relax, escape. It's now full on dictatorship, psychotic police state in Thailand. The energy there, the whole environment is extremely oppressive. And my friend, you know, he's from London, he's a lawyer. If he's watching this, shoot me an email. I doubt he's watching this, but he took me to this place, and literally we land and I just gotten over this terrible food poisoning. Every corner was a band cover classic rock band playing, like for blocks and blocks and blocks, everywhere. And it exactly modulates, exactly aligns with this implementation of police state. Now they're running chemtrails in India. Okay, all this stuff is happening. And I've been, like I said, it's not like I've walked there, you know, the other day. I'm like, this is, especially in India, especially in the particular environment, this is, someone is putting this in from the top. Most people, they don't like rock music unless, you know, I said they played guitar in college and they kind of like it, but it's not a mass phenomenon. It does not make sense, right? It doesn't make sense. But then noticing both of these states where you could sort of be free, right? You could escape to a certain extent, are now become
noticing the encroaching police states and suddenly the appearance of American British invasion pop music coming in at the same time as the police state, the coincidence there.
Yeah. And one of the worst experiences of my life, right? I was getting this organic oil foot massage and they had a speaker across the street, right? Not even there's a band playing, you're at some kind of sauna, and across the street they had a huge speaker and just playing the songs that I most hate of all classic rock, Foghat and all this stuff. And it was going on the whole time. And it was like I know what they feel like in Guantanamo, but so this, it was really bizarre, and it was like, and it was loud, all these songs, like the funny thing was the music there is all like Long Live Rock. All this mythology of rock is being kind of pervaded over there. But at the same time, like I said, I saw three people were killed within 2 days. I was in Thailand. There's a, there's an incredible amount. Hi, sweaty cop, cop on cop. People seem very nice. If they don't like what you're saying, man, they're gonna stab you. I mean, there's a massive amount of violence. There was three foreigners killed in feet of where I'm staying, right? I mean, one guy supposedly threw himself off a roof. Another guy got knifed. Another guy was beaten to death. We're talking like, look outside my window. And like I said, I've been to Thailand, I don't know, 6-7 times. And it was an absolute transformation. I've always thought, well, man, I'll just, retire to Thailand. I'll get out of the system. I'm like, man, it's now more of a police state. I mean, it's like prototype, but it's like the yin yang. But the interesting thing, again, based on, after 1 year, both of them were running these soundtracks and they're becoming omnipresent. Now there's a distinction in song selections, et cetera. But this really brought me to this idea of time, Chronos as accessed by our memories, as accessed by 10,000 years or how many thousands of years of human history, and the function and role that music played and the encoding of that. And at the same time, you have this massive destruction of cultural monuments, of historical heritage, which is going on at a level that is so far beyond, I don't care what, side of the political spectrum you're on. It's insane. Okay. It's like, we're just going to destroy, basically they're calling for the annihilation and flattening of like Thomas Jefferson, of everybody, George Washington. Now you can critique them, this and that, but you know what? You have to say, let's not get into the whole thing about the Constitution, whatever, but our symbolic language of this country, which did produce a lot of great things, is being right in front of our faces, is being destroyed, and it's being framed in such a way that it's part of this pincer movement that I came up with this the 3A model. What is it? Administration. Oh shit! I should have in front of me. It's AAA model of how they're doing this. Administration, architect, administration, and activist, agitator, AAA. You have the architects, you have the implementation on the level of the universities and other levels, and then you have the activist or architects. the activists or agitators, whatever you call them. You know, you can say, Antifa is a perfect example of that. But you have an architecture. You have a deployment of a long-term plan. You have some kind of philosophical grounding. And what I'll get to is a narrative grounding, a framing of history and your place in that history. Then you have an administration level. You have the mayors. You have the police officers. You have the, university professors. You have et cetera, right? All down the line. You have the HR people, whoever they may be. And then you have the agitators or activists, which are sort of, so to speak, this uncertain element, but a lot of times they're being directed. And in fact, you can use this model both for the mainstream, one side, the left side of path and the right side of path too. You can see these forces being articulated in certain ways. And, even for unformed types of resistance, then, the administrators are going to be a little bit further back in the scene. The administrator could also be the double agent who's directing the traffic, right? Then you have this pincer movement. But so this destruction of history and the eruption and just constant abuse that I have to hear, because I travel quite a bit and I go to these, even the gas stations, even I'm trying to take a piss, sorry, I have to hear some song. And then, but I started to notice, okay, there's all these 80 songs are coming, or there's all, even today I was in three different places. They're playing all of these sort of gospel tinged Stand By Me and stuff like that in three different locations. So be that as it may, I'm just saying that this was the entry point. And before I dive into the real meat, I'll let you just let you.
Well, yeah, I mean, it just what you're describing about Thailand and India, et cetera, is what we've been seeing happen everywhere, essentially. And it doesn't surprise me. I mean, they're trying to bring in a new world order. They're trying to encompass everything. They're trying to square the globe. And, who knows if they'll be successful. Maybe they will be. Maybe we won't win. Maybe we all get enslaved by this system. Steve Outram and I concluded the Burner series on Saturday, and he really laid out, this new control system that they've been implementing at Burning Man, which everybody is at, or not everybody, which 70, 80,000 people are at right now. And being experimented on by the intelligence community and the military and all of these university psychology departments, etc. And I do recommend you see that, because the technocracy that we see that they're trying to implement, and the control grid and transhumanism and all, it's startling to see and grass. So you put all of this stuff together and we're just looking at different aspects of the same thing,
Yeah, exactly. And this, the temporality thing that I'm going to get into, in some ways it's kind of relatively dense and complex, but I think that it allows a frame to put into place other things, but also provides an opportunity to shift that, right? So you can start to see how this is implemented, in your own life and yourself around you. I'm just gonna throw out an exercise here before I'm gonna read a long quote from The Spirit of Militarism, written in Stuttgart, 1915, which I think is just an interesting entree. But when you're in a public place, right? And you start to hear, and I don't know if other people around the country experience this, when they have the speakers going in, outside the gas station, inside the gas station, in the bathroom, notice how you experience the flow of time around you. Notice how you experience the relationality of yourself to other people. Notice what kind of memories are being triggered, what kind of experiences are being linked into or locked into. And let me just grab my water here.
Wait, I was just going to say, while you take a sip there, I posted an article the other day, which I mentioned to Steve too, and now it's way back there. I think I'm coming up on it here. Let's see. And I think I linked you to the article, but statistical analysis and the relationship between harmonic surprise and preference in, what was the rest of it? In popular music. Anyway.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's, you know, one level of the whole thing. And, you know, well, let me just give some of this background of what I'm going to talk about. So I'm going to start with a quote from this thing. It's a bit long, but I'll try to get through it here.
Sure.
So again, this is written in 1915. If, you know, people doubt this, I do have the original German. So here we go. Quote, "The historical mission of our world revolution is to rearrange a new culture of humanity to replace the previous social systems. This conversion and reorganization of global society requires two essential steps. Firstly, the destruction of the old established order. Secondly, the design and imposition of the new order. The first stage requires elimination of all frontier borders, nationhood, and culture, public policy, ethical barriers, and social definitions. Only then, the destroyed old system elements can be replaced by the imposed system elements of our new order. The first task of our world revolution is destruction. All social strata and social formations created by traditional society must be annihilated. Individual men and women must be uprooted from their ancestral environment, torn out of their native milieus. No tradition of any type shall be permitted to remain as sacrosanct. Traditional social norms must also be viewed only as a disease to be eradicated. The ruling dictum of the new order is, nothing is good, so everything must be criticized and abolished. Everything that was must be gone. The forces which bring about the desired destruction are capitalism and democracy." And I can go, we will have torn out the old limbs from their ancient roots in deep layers. Social norms will be lying disorganized and archaic and anarchic, so they must be blocked against new cultural forms and social categories naturally reemerging. Now, I skipped a bunch of stuff, but I think that's a very important line. We will have torn out the old limbs from their ancient roots in deep layers. So already this idea of, so to speak, non-linearity, cultural strata, right? Tearing out the limbs in deep layers. And then social norms are disorganized. Now, disorganized social norms, there is a natural process of human social organization that will generally emerge, right? So if the disorganized social norms after the 1960s, perhaps, had been sort of left to naturally reinfuse into the culture, things probably would have reached an equilibrium point. But of course, you have to keep repeating this destabilization of social norms. And then...
Really quickly, what was that quote from?
This is from Der Geist der Militarismus. Stuttgart, 1915, Nahum Goldman. So that's, I just got the, so this is like a manuscript. This is a sort of a manifesto type of thing, or they wrote a book, but yeah, so this is the spirit of militarism. So look up that book. It's kind of a rare book, but anyways, the next line though is very important. Okay, hold on a second. The general masses will have been first persuaded to join as equals in the first task of destroying their own traditional society and economic culture. So the general masses are convinced, right? You know, as we know, to join this. So So anyways, I won't dwell any more on that quote, but so what, you know, I think the overlay of this, you know, has this level of the chronology, the social history and all this other stuff. At the same time, there's a very distinct individual psychological effect that that's basically what I talk about. Is I talk about temporal balance, temporal imbalance, and how this affects people as individuals. And then of course this can be expanded into the wider frame of society. And so basically this idea of temporal balance is your ability to function within the three spheres, so to speak, of past, present, and future, which means that you have a connection of your past abilities, your history, and all this stuff is
your ancestors, so to speak.
Yeah, but also your own ancestry, because I think that the fragmentation point process is going on, you know, individual level.
So the real question then would be, Hans, What is it that we are capable of that they want so desperately to hide and cover up with this 30 steps ahead chess game that they're playing and all of this stuff? You know, rewriting history, putting in fake dark ages, all of the intelligence cells and academic cells, I guess that's an oxymoron or whatever. But all of these things are, you know, working, and they're spending billions, trillions of dollars to do it to keep us from knowing what and who we really are. That's what seems evident to me out of all of this. What's that big question?
I'm a reptilian.
You better be careful. All of the David Icke fanatics will be all over that. Oh my God! And they'll edit it right there where you just say that before I'm.
But in a sense, I'm a reptilian means that.
See, they're already saying I knew it in the chat room, dude. See, now you got to be careful with jokes like that because.
Well, no, but let me explain it. In the fact that I am responding.
It's like.
To condition stimuli, and I have intense emotional states that are repressed and refracted, which may manifest as kind of outburst, and I'm projecting my entire consciousness onto mass spectacles like, you know, major league sports, but not my painting. That's not a spectacle. That's the original work of art. But the whole point is that whether or not some people are saying the reptilian brain thing is not real or whatever, but I have really come to realize that there is a whole strata or element of our experience that is basically shut out of our minds to a certain extent, right? And as you start to sort of wake up and connect with that, you can, you start to see through that. But this goes back to, Birxie's sensory inhibition. You know, and how these signals and things like that in different types of stimuli will stop a stimuli in another place. And so to me, I think that this idea of the temporality and reclaiming temporality, reclaiming our time, which the time is literally, this is your life, right? This is your time has been converted into capital. Your time is converted into your home mortgage. Your time is constantly marauded by this quantum methodology of the Muzak Corporation and other places that are leaking in to these locked memories. And as I go deeper, I'll talk about nested temporal cycles, nested types of resonance, which goes to the level, cellular level, the neurological level, the seasonal level, cyclical level, all this stuff. This is now the fulcrum of the attack. And one level, I think that it's become so transparent because I think it's really, in a lot of ways, I think it's kind of an end game stage right now. And that's why I think it's important to sort of, you know, delve into this stuff a bit. And it is a bit complex, but it's something that is taken so much for granted. And let me just move on here. So we talk about this idea of the erasure of history and of time, right? And we can go back to this idea of time is becoming, right? Time is Heraclitus, right? This constant change, this constant becoming. And then you have Nietzsche, the will to power and the eternal return of the same, which is the ultimate, it's like the atomic explosion of the two most contradictory ideas, right? And that's why he said this is the most difficult thought, is the eternal return of the same, which means that everything we do, we'll be doing for all eternity. Every action is eternal. At the same time, you have this constant becoming and flux, right? So this idea of becoming or being is so important. But we have, you know, Pol Pot in Cambodia, year zero, the reset of time, right? Setting the beginnings for the Cambodian genocide, erasure of culture, erasure of monuments, erasure of history, erasure of mass loss of humanity. The French Revolution, you have year one. So in the French Revolution, far before the Marxist, you know, revolutions, you have this idea of year one, reset of society, destruction, burning, destroying. You know, related to that quote I said, then one last example, and there's many other examples of this. I don't want to get into it too much. But then you have year one, or year zero, whatever, the Taliban, right? When the Taliban took control of Afghanistan, they made the exact same claim, that we have now ended history. The entire temporal cycle of becoming is ended, right? And so this interpretation of Hegelian doctrine through Marx is actually Christian in a way. Okay, not in the sense of course, Christ as the embodiment of natural law, but Christian in the sense of you have a teleology going towards heaven, right? So the state of heaven is brought down to the material world, and that state of heaven becomes the worker's paradise, right? But then you have Trotsky, the constant revolution, doesn't seem all that heavenly. But anyways, so this idea of history and narrative has been extremely important. And the level of manipulation of this, you know, on the physical level, like I said, all these pop songs, the Muzak thing, which I'll get into a bit later. I'm mentioning that because we all have associations from these songs, depending on our age, but also depending on their embedding in lots of forms of media, right? Embedding in movies, right? You have these, you can trace certain songs and their associations through hundreds of films, right? You don't even have original soundtracks. At the same time, you have this back cycling of culture, which, you know, mentioned before, but look at all the 80s movies. I mean, come on. You know what I mean? It's like all these movies being remade. When I was in Asia, to me, this smacked of, wow, maybe this stuff I was kind of referencing is a bit deeper than I thought, right? Suddenly you have this liberalization of sexual values, right? But at the same time, and other quote unquote liberalization going on, at the same time, you have these uprising in universities. There's a lot in India, JNU, Jawaharlal Nehru University, lots of massive actions, police, you know, militant police stuff going at the same time, right? And again, in India, it was very anomalous because I guarantee you somebody went in there and said, okay, we just ran the cashless society experiment in India. Let's go ahead and roll this other thing, right? This other network. So this brought to my mind like this idea of time, temporality, the experience of time, and the collective shift in our experience of time. We have these basic connections with waking, sleeping, day, night, seasons, right? We have life cycles, different portions in our life, which have now been fragmented and fractured, right? There's no longer any transition points. But this is something that was, you know, again, a basic part of any type of functioning human culture, because you're also connecting that society or that individual experience with the broader experience of nature, but also giving it a developed frame in order to experience that, right? You have a door that can open, not a door that's shut. But the use of this prehistoric, right? The prehistoric use of music was extremely important, right? Because music was a linkage of man to the seasons, man to the individual cultural narrative, which I'll, you know, get to in a minute here, this cultural narrative that you become a part of, this story, which is actually, you know, much more than just a story, right? The narrative control. I mean, right now you can see narrative warfare, right? People are blowing up statues because of their placement on a narrative warfare. Continue. Yep.
Narrative warfare, meme warfare. That's another big one that's, you know, going on right now. It's like you launch a meme and throw it out there, and these Madison Avenue people are clearly marketing this stuff, or they have think tanks that do, and people up at Esalen and SRI, et cetera, cranking this stuff out.
Yeah, yeah. And so what's very interesting is you start to look at time, and a lot of the psychological disorders, right, are temporally grounded. They're related to a particular relationship. And that's why I talk about temporal balance and temporal imbalance, right? So whether it's a mind control, whether it's depression, whether it's anxiety, whether it's, you know, being, you know, totally scattered or having an inability to set goals and just, you know, basically drifting along, these are all related to the individual's connection to time and how they're situated in that time, right? That time space, right? So when we look at time, I mean, this is something that, again, is that it's, we just think, oh, it's time, okay, past, present, and future. Well, look at, I was just reading Wittgenstein, right? The Blue and Black books. He talks about now being part of the language game, right? Live in the now, stay in the now, be in the now, right? And this is actually a language game. This is a major, you know, deployment in the, starting from the 40s, even going back to whatever, you know, have all these, you know, live in the now, stay in the now, the power of now, you know.
Be here now, Ramdas, et cetera, right? You know, so then they're all promoting this same meme.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and I won't go into Wittgenstein right now because I've been doing a lot of stuff with philosophy because I feel that sort of the philosophical infrastructure of this stuff is very important, right? But now is part of a language game because now is, according to Wittgenstein, now is actually outside of time. We can reference now. Now is coming up. You have to go now. You have to, you know, oh, now I'll be going somewhere. But now it itself is not actually grounded in any kind of temporal cycle, right? The power of the present, of being present. This is a difference, right? Because when you're present, you have to go to the core of yourself as actualizing in the future and manifesting and being connected with future events, as well as connected to a past that's grounding you. But now is, in a sense, it was almost like a mind warfare term, because you can't, now has actually no cognitive grounding, right? So
well, and it's always, now is always fleeting, right? I mean, yeah. I mean, I say this now, but it's already in the past.
Yeah, and that's exactly why, you know, if you look at this sort of development of what I describe as temporal warfare, or timeline warfare, and obviously your work on chronology is going to tie into that a lot of different ways. But
well, yeah, we're going to need to have a powwow or something about all of that, you know?
Yeah. But so the now is very different from the present, right? So the present is, and I've been really, you know, digging into a lot of Heidegger stuff recently. And I really feel that Heidegger, again, was one of those giants that could not be destroyed because he was too powerful and too strong, but he had to be colored and always reinterpreted, right? So all these reinterpretations that are out there, but there is an actual very much sort of pragmatic and very, I have to say, you know, really the depth of his thought and what he's doing, it sort of devastates like the perennial philosophy of Aldous Huxley, right? Oh, live in the now, let go of all thought, and then you're just gonna, you know, then you'll obtain enlightenment, and that's the only goal, right? So I started seeing this man all, I'm going on a little bit of a tangent, but I started, you know, I picked up a bunch of books around the same era in the mid to late 50s, right? There's a book called The Hara, and it's several other books that, you know, and they're all on this same tip of let's discover this Eastern wisdom and let's, you know, go away. But then this book, The Hara, because I'm interested in that, right? In Taoist breathing, you have the Dantian, which is the energy center of the body, which I think there is a Dantian. I mean, I think there are. But this book, The Hara, okay, it had this critique of Western culture. And then there was no actual techniques provided, and then puts you in the same mind haze that you find in Aldous Huxley and other places, right? So this is what I'm describing as a process of temporal imbalance. So suddenly you've extricated yourself from your actual present life experience, and now you're trying to go into this now. But exactly, as Wittgenstein said, to ascribe temporality to now is a linguistic fallacy, because now, okay, it doesn't really, it's already gone, right? As soon as that word is uttered, it's gone. So it has no meaning. It has a reference point for a future action or a past action or a natural function. But it's, notice this level of cognitive warfare, right? You're moving that word. And so going back to what I said about temporal balance, temporal imbalance, so if you are living, so to speak, in this present, right, and you've sort of allowed the dimensions of the future and the past to sort of dissolve or decay, you can live in this wonderful dome, this nice pleasure dome, just like Burning Man, right? But you're in the terror dome. It's a public enemy, right? You're right. In your mad pleasure dome, but you're locked in because you're stepping into this new realm, but you've cut off your past. And then what is your future? You know, your future is just bouncing around in this.
Right. You don't have goals that you're working toward and stepping toward. It's just a random happenstance that happens when you get there now. You know,
exactly.
You and I didn't schedule this interview to begin at 5 p.m. Pacific time on Tuesday evening. You know, it was just happenstance. We, you know, and the 100 some odd people that are in there watching it live right now, they just all showed up happenstance, right? So then it's just everything is left to, you know, chance and quantum fuckery, essentially.
Yeah. Well, no, exactly. So I'll just go through the, you know, temporal imbalance and just how this relates, and then we'll, you know, go sure. A little bit deeper, or else, like I said, I'm happy. I'll just finish up a little.
Oh, just, yeah, go on. We got about 18, 17 minutes left or so.
Anybody have any questions? Well, let me just finish this up real quick.
Well, yeah, you know, if anybody has any questions, throw them up, and I'll try to track them in the chat and ask them as we go if, you know, we have enough time at the end.
And we can go off topic, too. That's not a problem with questions. So, but basically, so if you look at when you're in this state, not in the present, right, but in the now, not in the present, but in the now, that's a very important distinction, because the present, whatever present I'm in, I've gotten here from somewhere, I'm engaged in some activity, and I'll be going somewhere, right? Unless you've taken Santo Daime and you're in this hell of non-temporality. But and then somebody who has fragmented their temporal sense to the past, right? Depression, right? They're linked into this past event. They cannot engage in the present or a trauma. Everything they're experiencing is being filtered through this blockage, right, in their temporal experience, their ordering of themselves in time. And so if you're depressed, you know, my boyfriend left me. I mean, okay,
your mind is linked to that event in the past rather than engaged in the present.
And it's completely usurped your entire, but it's also a spectrum of the past, right? It's not your whole past. It's a spectrum.
It's a little tiny sliver. So, and then it overtakes you essentially. But if you can recall it and pull it back.
But it's also what I describe as a narrative filter. So that means that you're still in the present. Even if you're caught, if you're in the quotes now, or you're in the quotes past with your depression, or in your now where you have no long-term goals, you have no long-term planning, you're joining the masses with the process of destroying society, ripping the limbs out because you're enjoying yourself.
Right.
But these are still lenses or frames. So you're still in that present.
Right.
You're still engaging in action, but everything is completely colored and framed by that. And again, let me say that these narrative frames can cause warfare. They can cause genocide. They can cause, they're very powerful. It's not just a joke. And it actually can completely affect your entire life. And then you have the other side of the state of anxiety, right? So you're in the future. You're completely, everything is compressed. The future is compressed and everything is, I have to do this, after that. And you can't even breathe. And you have this constant stress or anxiety weighing you down, right? And this also comes with a sense of sort of discongruity. So this anxiety, and that's another example of a type of temporal dislocation. But again, as I said, this is goes on multiple layers and it's a bit complex. But this is, I think, is very important because I think this has been implemented on a cultural level. And I think that we're sort of, at an end game stage. Let me just throw a couple of things right now. In Sweden, they have dictates, from the government. Any new artifacts they find, ancient swords, ancient statues, they're supposed to melt them down into scrap. These are thousands of year old historical artifacts, and they're literally melting them down into scrap because, quote unquote, we don't have the money to properly catalog them and they may go on the black market. This is also happening in Norway and probably other places. This stuff is only because of whistleblowers have come out about this stuff being done. We even know about it. But that's, and then look what's happening in the States. And you can mention, where I'm at here in wonderful Columbus, Ohio, these beautiful old, stone buildings at Ohio State University, they're all being plowed to the ground. And they're putting up all these like modernist buildings. The whole campus is just being razed to the ground. With Wexner, Les Wexner is, pretty sure to him. He's, he's a major player in that. So, so anyways, I won't go into any more details right now. I'll see if you have any questions and we could probably continue this, but that's sort of the very simple overview of this. But the fact is that time and our location in time and our ability to even know when we're dislocated or even have a location in time is really central, right? So go ahead.
Oh, I was just thinking we've been centering around this idea of chess and being 30 moves ahead so that people can't even see how they're being misled and moved, nudged per Cass Sunstein, and all of this stuff happening around them. And it's done so subtly and so far out that you know, it becomes very difficult to find the nuances of the threads to find out what's really happening, whether it's temporal or whatever. But, one thing that I wanted to say regarding your comment on present versus now, it's like, again, like Ram Dass's book, Remember, Be Here Now. And so be here now, be here now, be here now, always suggests killing the future and killing the past, whereas and as you were stating, being in the present, being in the present means that it has an entirely different meaning. It also means, hey, I can be in the present, I can observe the past, I can plan for the future, but I'm in the present, I'm here in the present. The present is always present, but what they want to do is take us away from that, from any historical connection, from any, they'll attack the statues. They'll use that as a tool for free, to attack free speech, to, You know, and like you said, it's all the end game. They're trying to shut the whole system down to kill off the herd, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that's important to realize is that schizophrenia, right? So the psychedelic experience, the LSD experience, what it does or can do is induce, like schizophrenia, induces this temporal rupture. And so schizophrenia is a break in time. So it sense schizophrenia, you're in this eternal present. Present meaning it's a narrative structure you're inhabiting, but it's completely enclosed. Like, you know, a guy in Beautiful Mind or whatever, when you're schizophrenic, you have cut off past and future, but you're not present either. You're absolutely not present. You are in a now. You're in a now where you're functioning, but that now is the now that's being sold by people like Ram Dass.
Come on. Everybody knows it's Ram Dass.
Okay, yeah. But when you have this rupturing, right? And so this is so central, I think, and it's, like I said, it sounds a bit abstract or obtuse, but it's not. I mean, because it goes, again, to the level of entirety of social organization, to the neurological level, right? And to the connection, you know, diachronic cycles of night and day. So if you look at this concept, which is ties into nonlinear history, of this nested oscillators or nested cycles that we inhabit, right? At the same time, you know, Heidegger talks about this linearity of history where you have the past, the present, and the future. But the fact is you're always thrown into the future. You're always being propelled into the future. You're always being dislocated. So the now is not really a stable place, right? It's at the same time you're in this environment that's around you. So I can, you know, I can drop some really clean acid and, you know, my office, you know, my painting will turn into a Rembrandt or something. And
you can ride the wave of time then.
Yeah. And then my office will modulate into this like giant palace with a huge harem. And then I'll come down and like, I got to vacuum the floor or something. But that is, I think that a big part of it is these playing of levels and flipping things and moving things backwards and forwards and taking, just using the chess metaphor. For example, I believe that, you know, there is a possibility of synchronistic connections and things like that. But, you know, what you're doing is you're ascribing something. You have not gone into a detailed philosophical analysis. You are not aware enough of yourself, right? You're not intellectually grounded. You're not connected with your history that be here now. That's already the past, right? So in fact, it's not even a slice of time. It's a constant leaking to a past thought, which creates a temporal loop, which is when I talk about, you know, we'll get in this, you know, if we do this again, John Lilly, programmer, reprogramming the human biocomputer, you know, with the LSD therapy, you know, is very, you know, very important to this, but I'll just throw just a couple more things. You know, the idea, so we have the mechanical clock invented is based on, you know, well, Newtonian definition of time. Time equals velocity times distance, right? So suddenly you have this mapping of time, right? But it's velocity and distance. And and this is the beginning, to a certain degree, of the mechanistic biologic worldview, right? Which you talk about, I saw the thing on, you know, the hidden archaeology or whatever, you know, where Darwin, you know, is imposing this mechanistic biological model. And this, you know, this developed in various ways, you know, and it began gained more and more prominence, but you can see this theory of evolution really as being sort of a crown jewel of something that started out much earlier. And so you have this mechanization of time. At the same time, you have the capitalization of time, which is something that I've thought about quite a bit, right? This idea of time is money and how much this has become ingrained in ourselves, that our time on this earth, you can't quantify that. Even if you have $1 trillion, okay, well, maybe if I had to, you know, I just had to write a, you know, pee in a cup or something or run naked across the street and get $1 trillion, that might make sense. But money itself is a form of energy, so to speak, that's temporalized, right? It's locked in, it'll fluctuate with market value. It's not stable, right? It's constantly becoming. But this idea of time is money, this idea of this constant stress, this constant disembedding, so to speak, and disembodying, I think relates to this idea of this, I describe as temporal rupture, to create temporal imbalance. Now, whether or not you go into depression, whether or not you become completely high strung, you know, you're just caught in this perpetual anxiety, or, you know, you're just hanging out, having fun in the pleasure dome, or you're inside the pleasure dome as a schizophrenic, where you're caught in the perpetual present you cannot escape from. These are all examples of time or temporal distortion and manipulation. And like I said, there's a lot more detail to go into of how this is going out. But so the Muzak quantum modulation concept, and again, that quantum modulation concept goes back to the foundation of Muzak, quantum modulation. So that's kind of a little heady thing for, you know, the science of business music, founded by Major General George Owen Squire, another guy from the Signal Corps. Right? Army Signal Corps founded Muzak, right? But Muzak, it's, okay, quote, plan sound conditions, productivity and work area is stepped up. Quote, subtle psychological lifts, stimulus progression. Okay, so that's an example. Okay, background music used to play, this is Alan Collis, the new vice president of Muzak, quote, background music used to play a covert role in a particular environment. Now businesses recognize that they can put the power of music to work to create emotional connections. It's about team building. Let's impact it, you know. So it's an overt role now, right? It's no longer covert. It's an overt role, emotional connections. But what is that emotional connection? It's emotional connection of all the stimulus response triggers, you know, history, your emotional relationship, but also this imposed structure, which I would contend much as Burning Man, so to speak, or any of these other things, is creating a imposed temporal dome. It's like the schizophrenic now, right? That's being imposed on the entire society, which I think is the end point of the communist revolution. But
well, and it's interesting that you say that, because Burning Man is laid out as a clock. The streets, wow. you go to a specific time when you want to meet someone at Burning Man. So let's meet at 4:00.
That's crazy. I did not know that. It just blew my mind wide open. So I think I'm on to something, man. But that's, here's the thing. And this is, like I said, this is kind of an obtuse, not obtuse, but there's a lot of philosophical stuff, which is foundational. It's not just armchair speculation, right? But the locking down and destruction of the past, the creation of this eternal now, which is the year zero of Pol Pot, the year one of the French Revolution, the year whatever the hell it is of America, is structured in such a way that it's much more complex, in that within this enclosed, I'll describe it as a schizophrenic sliver, because in fact, with schizophrenia, you are completely bounded and locked into this world that you see as completely real. You can be depressed. You can be stressed out about the future. In fact, that's a major thing. And when you're living in the now, you start to feel you're bursting the bounds of the prison. But that's where the prison itself, you become the wallpaper or the enforcement of the prison, right? And this is kind of like the catch-all mechanism for people that kind of want to escape from that system. And I guess I can leave it there. There's, you know, lots. Anyways, yeah, that was an interesting kind of topic since you've been talking about it. Can we go over a little bit, or are we?
Yeah, sure. If you want, we can go over for a little bit there.
Okay. There you go. 999. I got a call from 999-999-9999. Okay, sure what that means.
Yeah.
But so anyway.
That's 6666 backward or whatever, inverted.
Yeah. But, you know, I'll just, let me just finish up a couple. I'll just go over the Muzak thing, which I thought was super interesting. So, because I was just trying to figure out, I was trying to noticing that in Asia, and then noticing this, and then starting to kind of log different locations and what they were playing, and even over days, right? Like types of music and how they even relate to current events or others, stuff like that. Very, very interesting, right? So it's, but let me just go over the Muzak stuff. So again, this British industrial psychologist, you know, and then we have the BIS, of course, British Institute of Standards, that implemented the A440 and started broadcasting it every night on the BBC. And even though they have every single other meeting before and after that one, they've lost the minutes of the A440 meeting, which makes me think this has other resonance. But so the stimulus progression, again, initially devised as a way to counter fatigue, boredom, other types of things, right? So it's something that you could engineer your workplace and create that. Now, this, again, going back to the ancient history of music, you have music being part of working, right? Traditional environment, you have work songs, you have seasonal songs. So people would work according to that rhythm. But these, again, were all acoustic. They were all natural performances. They were not reproduced sound objects, right? So even a recording is locking this moment in time, right? And so I'm kind of jumping ahead, but I think that the quantum modulation of this in a broader spectrum and the stimulus progression, I think that's what I saw of this incipient police state is basically where it's going. But so when they started to change this, right? So they changed their whole image. They've got all the, they even have a lot of people from the Sub Pop record label and grunge rockers who started working with Muzak and helped them program the Muzak, right? They have, so basically they have, originally, well, Muzak was done with wires, right? It was done directly on the electrical grid, electrical wires. And now they use, satellite dishes. So this is classified, right? So the quantum modulation technology is classified, and they have the sonic architects use 45 detailed categories of the Muzak, and then they're assigned quantum modulation scores. Of course, 60 broadcast channels, weird numerology. What we have is something that's extremely complex. If you look at this as architecture, if you look at this as, all the complex functions of music that, again, have a lot of neurological, psychobiological functions without our conscious awareness, right? So anyway, so we'll just, we can go into this a little bit more, hopefully in the future. But I think that this is, again, something that, this doesn't just tie into the Muzak, it ties into there's a whole array of this stuff that I think is now being coordinated on a much larger scale, which of course you can do, right? You've got, the algorithms. Sure. You know how to do that.
Well, it makes so much sense because we've been looking at all of this chronology stuff and looking at how they manipulated history, but why wouldn't they use aspects of time and chronology, chronos, father time, at all to manipulate other areas? So of course it would be key, to use this stuff against us.
Yeah. And again, there's broad intersections, right? So it's not that quote I read to you from that, Militant Manifesto. You're ripping the limbs off of deep-rooted soil. So that means that it doesn't just connect one place. When you affect, mothers going to work, you're affecting so many different other things. Now, maybe that's one root of another value, right? The stuff is all intertwined. At the same time, well, you don't have time to go into it. Linear and sedimentary time, which this philosopher Bruno Latour talks about, linear and sedimentary time is something where time is reconceptualized. The past is reconceptualized in the present. But in a sense, we're looking at these strata, right? So we're really on these layers, you know. So it's all these things are intertwined. But then, you know, you can start looking at, I mean, like I said, I've got a huge array of this stuff that goes into sitcoms and different things that are being released in sitcoms. And you start seeing all this stuff and the way it's being deployed and coming back and then tied into the quantum modulation technique from the, you know, signal corps officer who's like many other people who went into the radio industry. And maybe that was accidental because they had a background and skill set. But I mean, you look at the deployment of this in such a organized manner. And I started to think of like certain songs, you know, from like when I was growing up, this stuff, listeners might start to notice, you'll start to get a song like looping in your mind, you know, from some period. And you're like, why is that happening? Okay. But I'm just going to lay out my big hypothesis that this is, music is a great entry point to what I describe as this wide scale temporal dislocation, which the destruction of the past, I mean, it's all, you know, connected. It's not just one array, right? You destroy the future, but then what does it mean that you don't have a future? What does that mean? That's the same as like living in the now. I don't have a future. Well, you have a future because you just managed to make that statement and you're not lying dead there, right? But this whole manipulation and modulation is a very organized system that connects with all these different areas that really relates to, you know, what is the interesting point is that it has individual and group counterpoints. And I think that there is a net that's cast. And I think it's possible that some of these ingrained trigger points have been hit through cultural association, through involvement in a particular subculture or a popular culture, right? So it's possible these entrained trigger responses have been preconditioned, which are being accessed by all kinds of different variations, modalities of popular culture, et cetera, et cetera. And the only way that can fully function is the erasure of the past, is the erasure of the history, right? Is the bouncing around in this bubble where you're just stressed out, you have to do the, you know, da da da, or you're just like, I'm depressed, and then, or I'm living in the now, and suddenly you become the whole bubble. But when you become the whole bubble, you're still not present. You're still not there. And I think that's, anyways, I guess conclude with that there. And then, like I said, I can go into all this different influence, neurological influence of different types of BPM cycles, et cetera, et cetera. So, but I just thought it was a interesting corollary, but to just,
we'll have to mark this as a part one of this topic and have you back soon to go into more of it.
Yeah. So anybody shoot any questions out?
I didn't see any questions. There's a ton of comments in there. You know what? I haven't seen any donations in there yet today either. So, you know, they should be donating. I think you got a donate button on your website too now at hansutter.com.
I do.
And GnosticMedia.com, please donate. Also, there's a donate button right there in the chat room. So right at the bottom, you can just click it and donate. But let's have you back on sometime soon, and I'll try to, you know, this whole, oh, and that just, you should use Skype, that's showing up over here.
Oh, no, I just wanted to see the chat if there's messages.
Oh, well, you just sent it now. Everybody in YouTube land saw. Hello.
So, I thought if I could get some messages, but no, go ahead, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you can. It's probably just easier to send it through Skype still. But anyway, is there anything else we should go into before we wrap it up for today?
Well, if it wasn't so hard, right? If there wasn't a very strong, resilient aspect. You know, as you uncover and get connected with the stuff, then I think, you know, we'd probably all be, you know, we'd all be in the Brave New World baby vats at this point, you know? So I think that, you know, there's a lot that is possible, but I do think that really it is ramping up. I think that, you know, I think that this is something where the agenda is now very hot. Of course, you have this censorship, you're shutting down the internet, you have all this other stuff. I mean, I could go on and on and on, right? So I think it's very, very important.
Let's see. Somebody says for me to look at the questions. I don't see any. I'm looking through. Oh, wait, here's one. Question for Hans. What's your best? This is, you know, it's, what's your best treatment for tendonitis and carpal tunnel from playing music? That's like way off topic, though, really. I'll see if there's any more question marks in here. Let's see. You know, people can email you a donation or something, ask you medical questions, how you treat that stuff. I don't see any very many question marks in this chat room today. You know, folks, just so you know, questions and question marks, and that's what I look for when I try to find them. I don't see anything. Thanks, Amish, for a donation. He donated twice last show, too. Have either of you studied Royal Rife? No, I haven't. So that's, again, off topic.
Well, you know, I'll just say Royal Rife, this, you know, basically the idea of vibration, right, as fundamental to every level of, you know, from quantum to et cetera. So Royal Rife is someone that used, had, you know, cures for cancer and things like that, you know, using different types of frequencies and stuff like that. And he was suppressed and shut down. Very interesting guy. And that's, you know, exactly, you know, what, you know, it's sort of talking about. I mean, we have the 5G network coming out, right? That's an example of this, you know, vibrational warfare, you know, that's going on.
It's just improvements to our cell phones, you know, it's for their connectivity.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's why you choose specific frequencies that the brain operates on. There's huge arrays of open electromagnetic spectra. Why do you choose ones that directly impact the brain? I don't know.
Oswald asks, Beatles and Ravis Shankar connections. Are there any apparent?
Ravi Shankar connections. Beatles and Ravi Shankar. I mean, I'm not sure exactly. There's a lot of connections. I mean, you know, George Harrison, you know, was a student of Ravi Shankar, and I have my own, you know, beliefs. You know, I do think that Indian classical music is kind of unique in that it's actually still a living tradition. Most of the quote unquote classical musics of the world are ossified or museum traditions. Even, you know, I mean, Western classical music is still going, but, you know, when you had this, just like with modernist painting or whatever, you know, you have this, everything with the CIA funding all the atonal music, right? You instead of having everyone, you know, normal to go home and listen to some classical music. I mean, like I said, we can trace the, and that's part of also what I'm talking about is not just the, when I say temporality, I'm also talking about what I call quote unquote narrative structure, but it is something that, you know, if you look at why music is important in a sense, is that even when you're being bombarded by all these different types of frequencies, right? Those with certain types of music, there is sort of a protective mechanism as well as a healing or a learning mechanism that can happen with that, because the narrative structure, right? The complex dealing with like a symphony, you have all these different threads, very wide scope, wide arrayed, complex structure of time. In this case, of course, you have the vibrational aspect of how the sound is influencing you. But when you look at, like, now you have like techno, you know, suddenly you're in this prison. You just have this little thing and it's just kind of being hit like a strobe light, right? So that, but this is sort of a false version of what's known as ecstasis. Ecstasy means actually outside of time, right? Ecstasis. So ecstasis or ecstasy. But the act, in my humble opinion, or at least the opinion of some philosophers I respect, actual ecstasy comes from when you bring together all these aspects of time and experience, right? And you have a thing that grounds all of them. So you get this false ecstasy. It doesn't lead anywhere. But Beatles and Ravi Shankar, I mean, there's not really a question there. But
all right. Well, somebody else is asking, I heard that John Lennon offset his tuning from the other members. Do you think he understood discordant A440?
It's possible. There's a couple different ways there's several different ways to look at that. One way is that if you want to create a very minor field disruption in an audio production that otherwise sounds great, if someone's slightly off tune, it creates the subtle dissonance that will run throughout all the music. That's right. A negative corollary. Right. The other aspect is maybe he used to put LSD on his cornflakes, whatever. So maybe he just was trying to like separate himself from that vibe, or, you know, maybe he was in the A440 thing. I mean, it's hard to say, but, there's a lot of things that can happen with subtle distinctions in tuning. And that's why, again, the pummeling of our consciousness with this regurgitative music, most of it, which is really crappy. Like Billy Joel, I had to say. I mean, Billy Joel sucks ass. I'm sorry. I can't stand that guy. But,
make sure you add the caveat, in your opinion.
I mean,
because it's a broadcast, just say it, even if it's true, you know.
I love Billy Joel.
Yeah.
Caveat
in Hans's opinion, so that, and after you're done there, we have one more. And then we'll wrap it up.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Jacob says, I have temporal experiences with music that accesses aromas unique to the circumstances of the memories. I'd like to hear more about it. You ever had anything like that?
Yeah, well, that's one of the very, very powerful functions of music, which we haven't gotten into, but this... the operation, on multiple... kind of planes, of the brain, right? So it can access many, many different areas, because in a sense, it's just abstract, like it's sound, right? Abstract sound. And again, music was used by, evolving, maybe I shouldn't use that word, but quote unquote, primitive humanity, whatever. Music is a way of demarcating yourself against the environment. It's a way of, it had such a central function, because in a sense, sound is so highly attuned, right? In terms of our experience, both of time and physical placement and of danger and of other things, but also just as a way of, creating a space and creating something that can last over time. So music has many, many different possible associational aspects in memory. One of them being, the fragrance, right? So even people talk about, smelling something and remembering a piece of music, right? But this is you could say at one level it's a neurological encoding of music, but that's absolutely possible, is that it's gonna connect with these things, but it connect with them, and it can connect on very much an individual basis. And so certainly that's certainly possible, and for it.
Cool. All right. Well, I think that's probably a good place to wrap it up. We're about 18 minutes over here. Please support Hans, hansutter.com. Thank you so much, Hans, for coming back on again. We'll get you back on again soon and talk more about temporality, etc. Please support the show, everyone. Thanks for those of you who donated and helped support the show and the research. We'll see you next week. I don't remember who we had for next week. Maybe it'll be Dr. Hans Utter. All right.
Well, Jan, thanks. It's great to connect with you. It's been a while, so...
Yeah, hey. I'm glad you made it back safely and you weren't one of the three people murdered near you, so good to talk to you again, and we'll talk to you again soon, Hans.
All right, Jan. Take care.
All right, take care. Good night.